Ferris B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
Of Ferris B'nai Torah, Brooklyn, L'Zchus Rafua Shleima, V'Chaim Fishel Ben Sar Leah. The refreshments are sponsored by Yitzchak Posner, L'Rafua Shleima for a fall, Shraga Feivel, Ben Shima Guta. The Gemara B'Metzia brings down a rather perplexing statement when it says, "Kol yordim legehenim olim," all of those who go down to Gehenim come up, chutz mishlosha, except for three categories of people who go down to Gehenim, veinom olim, and they do not come back up. Now, we know that the concept of Gehenim is a period of time that a person will be in after they leave this earth to cleanse up their averas, to get rid of the impurities. The Rishonim explained to us it's actually a chesed. Hashem does a chesed to allow a person, for those things that they've done wrong, they have a chance to sort of clean it up. And typically that means that a person spends a certain amount of time there and then leaves, and for the rest of eternity enjoys their Gan Eden. However, the Gemara tells us that there are some people who go to Gehenim and apparently are not allowed out of Gehenim and spend an incredibly long period of time in there. Says the Gemara, which are these three groups? Habal Eishes Ish, a man who lives with a married woman, V'amalbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, and one who embarrasses his friend in public, V'amakana Shem L'Chaveru, and one who gives a derogatory nickname to a friend. Says the Gemara, Makana Haino Malbim, one who gives a nickname that is embarrassing. What do you mean it's two? It's the same. Says the Gemara, Afagav De Dash B'Shmei, even if the fellow who you're giving that derogatory nickname is accustomed to being called it and isn't really embarrassed, that's still in the category of embarrassment. He still feels a pain on some level, and you're in this category of going to Gehenim and do not come out. Now, there are a number of issues to understand with this Gemara. The primary issue that begs understanding is that we know that there's a order of severity to punishments in the Torah. If a person violates a los haseh in the Torah, if a person eats treif, if a person wears shatnez, he gets malchus. That is the lowest level of punishments, he gets lashes. There's a more severe category for which a person's chayiv kares, a person eats chametz on Pesach, a person lives in a nida, he dies prematurely. There's a higher category for which a person's chayiv misa b'dei shamayim, that means Hashem takes care of him, he dies early. And the highest category of punishments in the Torah is what's called misa's beis din. Now, Mrs. Bezdin basically means a person has done something that's such a severe violation of Torah principles that he's lost his lease on life. And we understand certainly one of the three fitting into that group. One who lives in an Eishes Ish is a home wrecker, a person who has treated the Jewish home with such disregard to break up a family, to seduce a woman, to destroy the sanctity of a Jewish home. We certainly understand why it would carry a very severe punishment. Making a mamzer and all that's associated with it certainly makes sense to be in a category described. But the problem is that the other two don't seem to fit the bill. Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim means that you embarrass somebody. Now, it's certainly wrong to do. It's not sensitive. It's not right. It's not proper. But the Gemara is telling us that it fits into the worst category of Avera, alongside living with a married woman. And more than that, it's in this category of those who go down to Gehenim and don't come up. And the question is, what's so severe? Excuse me, what's so serious? Why is it that the Torah deals with it in such a severe, serious manner that it carries this kind of punishment? But before we deal with answering this question, I want to deepen the question with two other references from Gemaras that again deal with the concept of Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, embarrassing someone in public, and seem to add even, I would say, more depth to the question. Says Gemara B'Metzia, Daf Nun Tes, Saman Aleph, Noach Lo Li'odam, it is better for a man, Sheyavol Safek Eishes Ish, that he should live with a Safek Eishes Ish, a question of whether a questionable Eishes Ish, whether she's a married woman or not, Val Yalbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, and rather than embarrassing someone in public. What does this refer to? And the Gemara explains to us. The Gemara tells us that David HaMelech lived with Bathsheba. Now, if you remember from Shmuz 42, we dealt with the issue as to what happened, Satan out of the box, what it means that David HaMelech, despite being an extraordinarily righteous individual, sinned. But the bottom line is, he lived with Bathsheba, and at the time, she was married. The Gemara tells us that what happened afterwards was he said to Hashem, Goliv yadua lefanecha, Hashem, it is revealed and known to you, Shim hayu makarim besari, had they cut my flesh, lo yadomim shosis la'aretz, my blood would not have flowed out from it. Meaning, he was so embarrassed and so pained by what he had done that he literally was white, and he said about himself he wouldn't have bled had they cut him. V'lo od, but not only that, he suffered tremendous busha because of it. And the Gemara goes on to tell us that he would go into a base medrash, and when people were involved in negoyim v'olos, Talmidei Chachamim were involved in very complex halachas, they would stop their learning when David HaMelech would pass, and they would say, oh, what's the halacha about one who lives with an eishes ish? What's he chayev? And his friend would say, oh, he's chayev chenek, implying David HaMelech. David HaMelech says, when they said these words to me, I said to him, you're right. A man who lives with an eishes ish is chayev chenek, he's chayev choking, but yesh lo chelek lomaba, he has a portion in the world to come. Aval hamal ben pnei chaveru barabim, one who embarrasses his friend in public, ein lo chelek lomaba, has no portion in the world to come. And this was David HaMelech's answer. Now, my friends, I want you to understand, David HaMelech was king. A morid b'malchus in the time of a melech b'Yisrael was chayev death. Instantly, David HaMelech could have evaporated these people. He didn't have to put up with it. But the reality is they were saying something, and his answer back to them was, you are correct. What I've done on some level is certainly wrong, but it's nowhere near as severe as what you've done. And in fact, David HaMelech lived with a suffolk eishes ish. Bathsheba at the time was married to Uriah HaHiti, but anyone who went out to fight a war in David HaMelech's army wrote a get to his wife Altanai. The get read that if I die in battle or if I don't come back, this retroactively is your divorce. Uriah HaHiti was killed in battle, so retroactively, in fact, she was divorced before David HaMelech lived with her. So in reality, he didn't really live with an eishes ish, but the point being, he lived with a suffolk eishes ish, and his point to these people were, you're right, what I've done is a grave, serious sin, what you're doing is far more severe, because amal p'nei chavei barabim is ein lo chelek lo maba, has no portion in the world to come. And again, it seems to be an almost exaggerated reference to Malbim Pnei Chaver Brabim embarrassing someone to have a punishment that doesn't seem to fit the crime. But one more reference, and that is what the Gemara says, Noach lo li odom, it is better for a man, Shiyapil atzmo lekivshan eish, that he should throw himself into a fiery furnace, Val Yalbim Pnei Chaver Brabim, rather than embarrass his friend in public. Says the Gemara, that statement actually refers to an event that happened in Chumash. The Chumash tells us that Yehuda married a woman and had three children, Er, Onan, and Shelah. At a certain point, when Er became mature, Yehuda found for him a particular woman whose name was Tamar. Er married Tamar, and very quickly the Pasuk tells us that Er was Rab Einei Hashem, Er was wicked, Hashem killed him, and he died at a very young age. Yehuda told Onan, Er's brother, do Yibam, you take Tamar. In fact, that's what he did. Onan married Tamar. He too was Rab Einei Hashem, he too was wicked, he too died. And then the Pasuk says that Yehuda had a fear. His fear was Er died, Onan died. If I'm going to give Shelah to Tamar, he's also going to die. So he said to Tamar, wait. Wait till Shelah grows up. Wait till he becomes older. And then you can, in fact, marry him. When Shelah came of age, that's not what Yehuda did. Yehuda did not give Shelah to Tamar. And Tamar understood that she was to be in that state. The Pasuk then tells us, very shortly thereafter, Yehuda's wife died. Yehuda went out to be Gozei Sono, he went out to shear his sheep, and Tamar understood that. Tamar went out to seduce her father-in-law. In that time, the Ramban explains to us, in that time, Yibum was done not only to direct brothers, but even to other relatives, and she understood that Yehuda would be the appropriate person to do Yibum. But Yehuda was not willing to do it. She went out and she posed as a zona, as a prostitute. And amazingly, the pasuk tells us that Yehuda assumed that she was a prostitute because she covered her face. V'chitzesas paneah, she covered her face, says Yehuda, that shows me that she's a prostitute. And Rashi is bothered by how does that tell Yehuda that she's a prostitute. Rashi says, actually, that shows us the extraordinary tznius of this woman. She covered her face doesn't mean when she's sitting on that crossroads, that's what made Yehuda think that she was a prostitute, but rather because she covered her face while she was in Yehuda's house. The entire time that she was married to Er, the entire time that she was married to Onan and lived in Yehuda's house, Yehuda never once saw her. He didn't recognize her because that entire time she was covered by a veil, by the tzif, and Yehuda didn't recognize her. When she went to that precious drachim, when she sat on the crossroads, she uncovered her face, and then Yehuda did not recognize her because he had never seen her before. V'achshavel zona, he assumed that she was a zona. The Dan Sekanim explains, he had another person with him, he made a kedushin, and he said to her, he propositioned her. She said back to him, I agree to your proposal, but what are you going to pay me? So he said, I'll offer you a gedi from the tzon, I'll offer you a calf. At which point she said back, show me something that's guaranteeing it. He said, what could I show you? So she said, fine, give me your signet ring, give me your stick, give me your me'il, I'll hold them as a pledge, and then when you redeem it, I'll give them back to you. In fact, that's what happened. Yehuda was mekadesh her, lived with her, and then went home. The next day, Yehuda sent his shliach to go redeem the pledge. He sent it with the gedi to get the pledge. Ayei hazona, where is she? No one could find her. They began asking around, where is the kadesha who sits on this crossroads? No one heard about her. No one knew about her. She disappeared. And for 3 months, Tamar was unheard of. After 3 months, when she began showing, the word came to Yehuda that your daughter-in-law was mezana. Your daughter-in-law had an affair, and she's pregnant from that. Amazingly, Yehuda was the Av Beis Din at the time. And Yehuda convened a Beis Din to judge Tamar. What should happen to her? And the Dan Sekanim explains that Yehuda was afraid that people would learn from her behavior. And Yehuda instituted something that Beis Din is given permission to do, something that's outside the normal punishments of the Torah. He judged her l'sreifa. Now, sreifa in the Torah is a somewhat mild form of death. He judged her to being burnt at the stake, literally burnt alive, which does not exist in Torah law. And he judged her that way because the generation he was afraid would learn from her. And in fact, the Gemara tells us that she was taken out to be burnt. The stake was set in the ground, the wood was on the floor, it was lit. And while they're walking her out to be murdered, she said these words, bring these three things to Yehuda. Bring this signet ring, bring this staff, bring this coat to Yehuda, and tell him these words. From the person to whom these belong, I am pregnant. Amazingly, she didn't point the finger at Yehuda. She didn't say, here's the evidence that you're the father. She said, bring them to Yehuda and tell him from the person who owns these, I am pregnant. And the Gemara tells us the reason why she did this was because she did not want to embarrass Yehuda. Being the fact that he was the one who lived with his daughter-in-law, being the fact that he was the Av Beis Din who paskened on it, it was a mighty serious and grave embarrassment to be caught. She would not do it. She was willing to be burnt alive. In fact, once Yehuda got the signet ring, the mata, and the seal, he said, Sodka, she is righteous, mimeni, he admitted, and he married her and stayed with her, and in fact, two great tzaddikim came from that union. But the Gemara says, the lesson that we learn from this is, look at this woman. She was prepared and willing to be burnt at the stake rather than being malbim p'nei chaver b'rabim, rather than force Yehuda to suffer the embarrassment. And in fact, the Dan Sekanim says, her heart was brave as a lion. She said, I will not be a part of causing him to be embarrassed. And she said, I would rather be burnt alive. And she was prepared exactly for that. And again, the Gemara concludes, it is better for a man to be burnt alive rather than embarrass his friend in public. And now, if you haven't quite heard how severe the Torah views it and the problem understanding it, I'll give you one last line. And that is Tosas' question. Tosas asks in Sota Navyud Ambeis the following. If in fact the Gemara's conclusion is that a man is better off being burnt alive rather than embarrass a man in public, why isn't this one of the three Yahrog Valyavors? Meaning, we know there are three cardinal sins that a Jew is obligated to give up his life for. Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Domim, and Avodah Zarah. Not to live with an illicit relations, not to kill a person, and not to serve idolatry. If someone holds a gun to my head and says, bow down to that Avodah Zarah, live with this woman, or kill this person, I'm obligated by Torah law to give up my life. Only for these three things, none other. Says Tosas, why isn't this included? Mal ben Pnei Chavei Barabim, according to this Gemara, should be included. Why isn't it? Says Tosas, the answer, it is included. It's included under the category of murder, because since the Gemara tells us in another place that embarrassing a person is like killing a person, this is in the category of Shrichas Damim, meaning you should give up your life rather than embarrass a person. And now, I think the question begs to be asked, what's Pshat? Again, that the Torah is sensitive is clear, but this seems a little bit exaggerated, it seems a little extreme, it seems a little bit beyond the pale. So what's Pshat? A number of years ago, I was involved in yeshiva, and some of the fellows in this particular yeshiva were a little rowdy. And Anhola had a problem of explaining to the guys where the lines of appropriate behavior are to be drawn. And especially, as you know, high school guys tend to roughhouse a little bit. You know, he pushed me, I punched him, we weren't kidding, etc. So they made a very simple rule. The rule is like this. If you punch a guy, you pay a $50 knas. That's it. That's the rule. I don't care why, joking, not joking, roughhousing, not. You punch a guy, you pay a $50 knas. Now, this rule was rather effective, and most guys got the message not to do it, that's beyond the pale. Fine. Happened to be, after a couple of months, a certain fellow punched another guy in the jaw. And in fact, decked him. So the question came to the issue came to the Manal, and the Manal said, okay, pay up $50. The guy who punched his friend in the jaw said, wait a minute, Rabbi, wait a minute. The guy is clearly a baby. He's a crybaby. There's no way that it really hurt him. I'll prove it to you. Because look, my knuckles barely hurt. He's just carrying on. He was serious. Get the joke? See, my knuckles barely hurt. So obviously, he's just a crybaby. He's just carrying on. Now, there's one little problem with that line of thought. The little problem is that it doesn't matter how your knuckles feel as you punch the guy in the jaw, it matters how the guy's jaw feels as you punch him. Meaning, the way you feel about it, it really is irrelevant. The question is, what does he feel on the receiving end? And Rabosai, I want you to know, it doesn't matter how I feel when I say the line, but do you ever remember that time in your life when you were embarrassed to the extent that you started turning red, then white, you wanted to find a hole in the floor and climb into it. You felt like daggers were stabbing you. You felt like you were being ripped apart. Well, whether you remember that or not, when you're in a situation of a malbim pnei chaver barabim, there is a Jew who's experiencing pain, extraordinary pain, and the Torah is very, very sensitive to a Jew's pain. And what that means is that the person who is embarrassing his friend is a living antithesis, opposite of the Torah. The Torah stands for sensitivity. The Torah stands for chesed. The entire Torah is concern and care for another human being. And a person who's malbim pnei chaveru barabim, who's embarrassing another person, is engaged in the exact opposite activity. Words that hurt, words that damage, words that embarrass, and causes another person pain. And what the Torah is teaching us is a very simple yesod. That simple yesod is it hurts, and the Torah views that pain, understands that pain, and the Torah says this is how severe that pain is considered. You see, the problem isn't the Torah, the problem is our sensitivity to another Jew's pain. And the chiddush of this Gemara is a little bit what we'd call a paradigm shift to understand how sensitive the Torah is to another Jew's pain, how sensitive we have to be, and how serious the Torah takes it. And that's what the Gemara is telling us. It is better for a man, if you ask Hashem, in the scale of things, what am I better off doing? You are better off being burnt alive at the stake rather than embarrassing a person, because exactly what David HaMelech said, if you embarrass a person, you go down to Gehenna and you don't know that you're coming back up. Because that's quite how severe the Torah views it. Pshuto kimashmo. No esoterics, no super deep things. It's a very simple thing. The Torah says this is a big deal of Avera, not to be taken lightly, but quite the opposite, to be taken exactly, very seriously, very, very real. Now, you should know something. It's not always easy to relate to the Torah's view of things, and a lot of times we find it foreign. And a lot of times the things that we think are key, essential, and maybe even the things that we work on because we think they're the things to really focus on, might be off from what the Torah views. And one of the jobs of a Jew is to come back to the Torah for guidance, to show me what are the essentials, what are the important things, and listen to what the Gemara in Bava Metzia says. Amar Abaye l'Rav Dimi, Abaye l'Rav Dimi, b'marova b'mai zihiri. In Eretz Yisrael, what are they careful in? What are the things that they're really meticulous in? What are the things that they're really working on, that they really hold as the important issues? Amalei b'achvure ape, not to embarrass another person. That's what they're working on. You know their chumras? Their chumras are in that area. Now, I had this special schus of having a certain relationship with my Rebbe, with the Reshiva, and I got to see what a lot of us got to see, that the Reshiva, my Rebbe, has chumras. Now, most people are amazed, because if you know the Reshiva Shita, Reshiva has very, very few chumras. Very, very few chumras. It's enough you keep the halacha, as the Mishnah Berurah says it, that's sufficient. Halavai, we do that. But there's one area that the Reshiva has chumras in, but they're not very popular areas because they're hard to keep. The Reshiva has chumras in Ben Odom Lachaveros. And what that means is, in the way you act to other people, the way you speak to other people. I once said this, I found out the hard way, the Reshiva would not hang up the telephone. If you called the Reshiva, and I remember I only found this out, someone had warned me before I spoke to the Reshiva on the phone. I'd been always spoke to the Reshiva in person. And one time I was away and I had to call the Reshiva for a Shaila, and Baruch Hashem, someone cued me into the fact that the Reshiva has a Chumrah. That Chumrah, I only found out the hard way, was that if you called the Reshiva would not end the conversation. After all, you called, it's like you went to visit. It's not appropriate to hang up the phone. Now, Baruch Hashem, someone told me that, because I called the Reshiva, asked a certain Shaila, and went through the whole discussion, etc. And then when the conversation ended, it was rude for me to end the conversation, so I sort of waited. And the Reshiva sort of waited. And then I waited. And the Reshiva waited. And I didn't say anything. And the Reshiva didn't say anything. And it's getting schleppy. And then I was like, oh! I remember. Oh, thank you, Rebbe. Thank you. And I ended the phone call. Because if I didn't remember that rule, I think we may be still on the phone right now as we speak. But you have to hear the sensitivity. He called me. How could I end the conversation? How could I? That's almost rude. It's offensive. Do you hear that sensitivity? You may not even understand what I'm saying because we're so accustomed to click, click, click. I'll share with you one more. In all my years in Blatcher, I never once heard the Reshiva say the words, you're wrong. That's not, can't be, it's wrong. Now guys would fight, guys would yell, how do you know, how do you know, how do you know? The Reshiva at most would say, well, maybe it's the other way, maybe it's the other way. One more last observation. The Reshiva's father would never look up when giving shir. Now you have to remember this. He's giving shir and people come in the back door late. What is the first thing that people do? When you hear the door open, the Reshiva, or who's ever giving the shir, looks to the door to see who it is. What happens? As the Reshiva looks, all the people in the audience look too. And 50 heads turn to the door. The guy who walks in goes, wants to crawl into a hole in the ground. Reb David would never look up. When giving shir, the door banged, the door opened. He would continue looking down. But listen to what this is. It doesn't sound like a big deal. It doesn't sound about, you know, you don't write art scroll biographies about that kind of stuff, right? Well, you don't unless you understand the sensitivity that the Torah has to another Jew's pain, until you hear the sensitivity that the Torah has to embarrassing a friend. And I think there's an eye-opening chiddush from the Poshet Pshat in this Gemara, just hearing that these are the people, the Eishes Ish, a man who lives with a married woman, and a man who embarrasses his friend in public, goes down to Gehenna and doesn't come up. Now the Mashal explains it doesn't mean forever, but it does mean for a lot longer than a regular person goes. And just understanding the paradigm shift, that alone, I think is very important. Now, you may say to me, that's Malbim Penecha Ve'er Barabim. That means making a guy turn red, turn white, there's got to be a Rabim, there's got to be a Minyan. How often does that really happen? That's not that common, right? Now, the truth is, you're right. It isn't that common, but I'd like to share with you guys an observation that these things do happen. And once you hear this, I think you'll agree with me that it's not just this situation, but if you study life, you'll find there are other situations like this. I want to share with you a classic Malbim Panei Chaveru Barabim situation. Okay? Imagine for a moment we're all invited to Moshe's Bar Mitzvah. Mazel Tov, Moshe's Bar Mitzvah. Now, Moshe is that short, pudgy little guy. He's about 2.5 feet tall. He's got those red cheeks. And everybody comes to his Bar Mitzvah. His uncle David and Aunt Mariam and the Bubbies and Zadies. And everybody's there for the Bar Mitzvah. And little Moshe gets up to lane. Of course, he doesn't quite fit to the bima. They put a phone book for him to stand up. And he reaches up to the bima with the yad. And he starts laning. And he's doing a bang-up job. He gets to the Rishon, no problem, because he's mastered it. He gets through Sheni, not too bad. Comes Shlishi, he misses on a segel. Now, we all know the halacha. If it doesn't change the meaning of the word, it's not ma'akev, and you don't send the guy back. You don't correct the balkori unless it's ma'akev, unless it changes the meaning and you have to send them back. But of course, there are a couple of wise guys in the audience who are listening very carefully, and they correct them on a segel that's not ma'akev. So he gets a little flustered, and again he gets to the word ba'a, and he says ba'a. And that might be ma'akev. Ba'a, 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 ba'a. You ever hear the crowd scream out, ba'a, 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 and you hear 70 voices screaming out. Now the kid's already flustered, and he's going to get a little bit nervous. He made two mistakes already, and this is getting a little hot under the collar. And then he gets to the word mitzarim, and he reads it as mitzrayim. He is dead. That's it. Mitzrayim, 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 they scream out from every corner, and the kid is now starting to sweat, and he's starting to get nervous, and he's starting to make mistakes. By the fifth mistake, Rabosai, mark my words on this one, by the fifth mistake, you're going to see a phenomenon that is rare to see. You'll find guys who have not paid attention to laning in 10 years run over to the wall, get a chumash, open it up with a finger on place, looking. We got a live one up there. And when he gets to Shvi and he starts fumbling, you're going to hear the entire crowd scream out, Ba'a Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim. And you're going to witness the kid cry. You watch his face turn red. You watch his face turn white. And Rabosai, welcome to Malbim Panei Chaveru Barabim. Been there. I have been there, and I don't know for sure if this is the right halacha or not, but I've also walked out. And I'll share with you why I walked out during laning. There is a chiyuv on the tzibur. According to almost all shitas, there is an obligation upon the shul, the tzibur, to have kriyas haTorah. That is a chiyuv at most the rabbanon. There is an isser d'oraisa called malbim p'nei chaveru barabim. And you know what? You can't be malbim p'nei chaveru barabim if there's no rabbim. And I do not want to be amongst the rabbim who are wiping a guy out. And I'm telling you, lamais, I've walked out of a shul because there are some times when it gets a little too hot. And I really don't want to be in the audience because I don't want to be counted in that rabbim. You'll ask your local posik as to exactly what the halacha is, but you should know. Look in Simen Kuf Mem Beis in the Mishnah Berurah in Shulchan Aruch, and you'll see that there are shitas that tell you not to ever correct the Baal Kore, never, even if it's Ma'akev, because it's Malbim B'nei Chaveru Barabim. And at most, Rabos, I want to share with you, there is in the world something called a Gabbai. You know what the Gabbai's job is? The Gabbai Rishon and the Gabbai Sheni, in case the first one misses, are the two gentlemen stand at the bima whose job it is to quietly correct the Balkori when it's necessary. But the job of the rest of the tzibur is not to scratch out the Ba'a Mitzrayim and scream it out for all to hear. And the reason why I'm sharing this with you, first of all, it's important to know that the next time at the Bar Mitzvah, you want a little piece of Eitzah? If you find the Bar Mitzvah boy making mistakes, either close your chumash, take off your glasses, or don't catch him, because I'm telling you, it's not such a good idea. But more importantly, or as importantly, is the fact to understand that these type of events happen from time to time. And if you become sensitive to it, you become aware of how grave the Torah considers it, you'll understand to be careful about these things. And by the way, it's not just when a kid gets bar mitzvah. You ever watch somebody get up to speak at a Sheva Brachas and you notice like his leg kind of shaking and his hands kind of twitching and he's like shaking like a leaf? No one understands the wrong wisecrack at that moment, the wrong line at that moment could be very, very painful. I once told the guy, it was recently at a masiba, I told the guy, go get a shtender. I told him, you want to do a mitzvah? Go get a shtender. Why? Because I knew a fellow had to speak. He had a speech written out on a piece of paper. And for him to hold it there would have been very, very embarrassing. There was no shtender. I told him, go find a shtender. You'll be doing a mitzvah. The guy found the shtender. The fellow who was going to speak put the paper on the shtender and was much more relaxed. And the point is that once you hear how severe the Torah views a Jew's pain, how seriously the Torah takes this issue of Malbim Bnei Chaver Barabim, you gain a sensitivity and you start changing the way you view things and it affects big deal issues. Now, Lemaisa, I think though, that there's a far more applicable vort here. There's something that applies much more in our life. And it's not the big deal Malbim Bnei Chaver Barabim at the Bar Mitzvah or the Sheva Brachas. It's something that I call the something of a heter, which I'm not sure everyone knows about, but there is in the world something called the ha-ha heter. Now, the ha-ha heter, I'll explain to you what that is. It was back in the Cold War, in the Gulf War, when I first really got to feel this heter up front. Steve Solars, who was then a congressman, was being interviewed along with George Mattingly, who was a college professor. Now, again, this was the right before the breakout of the Gulf War, and there were a lot of issues that no one knew the answers to. So these two gentlemen were being interviewed for their understanding about what to expect. So George Mattingly, who was this college professor, went first, and he went on a very learned, somewhat long treatise of explaining the issues of the ground war and what to expect and chemical warfare and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when he was done, the interviewer then turned to Steve Solars and said, well, Congressman Solars, what's your take on this? At which point Steve Solars says, well, the first thing is, I thought the war would be over before George finished. You hear? I thought the war would be over before George finished. Now, I want to make an interesting observation. Would you like to know what that congressman did? In front of 2 million people, he destroyed a human being. He wiped them out. He embarrassed him, he shtucked him in a major way. But here's the observation. What do you think happened the next day when Steve went back to Congress and his buddy said to him, Aya Shanda, how do you speak that way to a college professor, a learned man? I don't think that's what they said to him. Steve, what a lie! I thought the war would be over. Good one, man. That is sharp. Yeah, the war would be over. Good one. All right, go for it, Steve. That is what I call the ha-ha heter. You see, the ha-ha heter works like this. You could say whatever you like. It could be as nasty, as dirty, as hurtful as you care it to be, provided at the end of your sentence the people around go, ha, 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 it's mutter. It's okay, nothing wrong with it. Ha, 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 it's funny, you see? Therefore, it's mutter. So what that means in plain language is you could say lines that hurt, lines that destroy, lines that cut a guy to the quick, but as long as there's a little bit of a ha, 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 ha afterwards, it is mutter. And if you don't quite believe me, I guarantee you, find people of very good graces, very belonging to good social classes, people have all the nice behaviors in the world, and on a regular basis, they engage in something called rankouts, put-downs. We even in our culture, we have an expression called a shtuch. That's a good shtuch, it's a good line. And again, provided that people laugh at the end of it, it's considered fine socially, it's not morally condemned, no one looks down at you because it's got the ha-ha heter. And Rabosai, I think it's important to hear clearly that the ha-ha heter don't quite make it. It's not quite as mutter as it sounds to. And the reason why I want to share that with you is because you have to hear how sensitive the Torah is to that pain. And once you hear how sensitive the Torah is to Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, granted this is nothing like that. Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim means to make a guy turn red, turn white, and really cause a deep-seated pain, berab him in front of a minion. So it's rare when you're going to pull the rank out of the line, etc., in good humor, that you're going to cause him that kind of pain, but it's not that distant, And it's something that if you're wise, you'll avoid. In general, I have a good eitzah. A good eitzah is to choose your words carefully and use your words to build up people. I've gotten to see in my life a few individuals who use their words almost always to build people up, to compliment people, to help people. These are rare, wise people. Even if you tell me I'm not on that madrega, I can't guard myself all the time, I'm giving you a little bit of an eitzah. And that eitzah is, be very careful with your jokes. When I was a kid, someone told me the rule. The rule is like this. If you want to make a joke, make the joke provided the following. Ask yourself this question. Is there a line of truth? Is there a thread of truth in the line I'm about to say? If there's a thread of truth in the line, don't say it. Meaning, the lines that are truthful are the ones that hurt. When you tell a big, strong guy, hey, you're a wimp, nobody really feels any pain. When you tell a guy who's not that popular, you know, hey, you're a loser like you, and you, whatever you finish it with, you wear the sign, you know, you're funny, you look ugly, and your mother dresses you dumb, you know, whatever your lines are, if in fact they fit the guy, no one understands that you're treading on very, very dangerous waters. And in fact, your words may come at a very great cost. I think there's a tremendous lesson to learn from this Gemara. When the Gemara tells us, Kala Yordim Leganim, there are those who go down to Ganim, don't go up. It's Eishes Ish, living with a married woman. Right up there is Mal Bim Pnei Chaver Brabim, embarrassing a friend. From Tamar, we see to what extent it is better for a man, says the Gemara, to be burnt alive than embarrass a person. And Tamar was willing to be burnt at the stake, physically destroyed, rather than embarrass Yehuda. And Tosus tells us that's the halacha. If you're going to be in that situation, it's a Yarog V'lo Yavor. And again, even though those grave situations rarely happen, maybe the bar mitzvah, maybe the speech, but just hearing the Torah sensitivity can cue us in to the rest of life, how sensitive we have to be, how careful we have to be. And by the way, Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim even applies to one's wife, even not Barabim. And what that means is you got to be pretty careful what you say, how you say it, because your words can be very hurtful, and the Torah is very sensitive to those words, and the effects are very grave. I want to close with a story about Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchansky. Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchansky was the mashkiach in Rabbi Yochanan's yeshiva. This was in Europe, actually right around, I guess it was before World War I. And Rabbi Yochanan had a yeshiva in Baranovich, a very famous yeshiva. The mashkiach there was Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchansky. And Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchansky was also the Rav in town. What happened in the town where Rabbi Lubchansky was the Rav was that in that shul, the way they heated the shul, as all shuls in Europe, they would heat with a wood-burning furnace. The shamash's job was to cut wood early in the morning, put the wood into the furnace, light it, so that within a half hour or so after the fire was lit, the shul would be warm, so that by the time the first mispalim would come in, it would be warm. When the shamash began his job, he was an old man, and it was tough for him, but he began the day every day at 6 o'clock, made sure the fire was lit, so by 6:30 the fire was lit. After a while, people noticed that the shul was cold, and he started yelling at the shamash, "What's the matter with your lazy bones? What's the matter with your lazy bum?" One day, the Rav, Rav Lubchansky, heard that they were making fun of the shamash, they were abusing him. From that day on, they never had a problem. Every day the shul was warm, by 6:30 it was perfect. And no one understood why, but what had happened was, from that day on, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchansky went to the woods himself, cut the wood, put it in the stove, lit the wood himself early in the morning so that no one would bother the shamash. And this went on for a long time. Every day the Rav would be there putting the wood into the fire. One day, the shamash somehow decides Taka to come early at 6 o'clock. And he sees in the putting into the wood into the fire, the Ani, one of the Aniyim, obviously one of the beggars who sleep in shul, has decided it's too cold, so he's putting wood into the fire. So the shamash, being a good-natured fellow, decided to have a little fun. He sees the Ani over there putting wood into the fire. He goes over and gives a swift kick, whop, right to the Ani's posterior. The Ani's head goes right into the fire, almost being burnt. And the shamash walks away. The only problem was it was not an Ani. It was Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Lubchansky, whose head was in the fire, who didn't dare take his head out. Why? Because if the Rav in town would take his head out, then the shamash would see that who he kicked and who he cooked into the furnace, the shamash probably would have had a heart attack on the spot. What Rabbi Yaakov Soloveitchik Lipshansky did was he stayed in there and waited for the shamash. The shamash walked over here. The shamash got a siddur. The shamash walked over there. The shamash took a chumash. Then the shamash walked away to the front of the shul. When the shamash was a good distance away, Rabbi Yaakov Soloveitchik Lipshansky took his head out of the fire. And the only reason anyone knew about it is because when the Rav showed up to davening that day with half of his beard burnt off, people asked questions. And Rabbi said, I want you to hear what was going on there. The man understood, with the fumes of smoke gagging him, he understood the busha of the shamash. The shamash deserved it. He deserved to be bushed out because you kick even an ani. I don't care what your excuse is. You deserve what you're going to get. But I can't be a part of it. I can't embarrass a person. The embarrassment is too much. I'm going to stand there. And he kept his head in the fire. And on both sides, it's eye-opening to hear how sensitive the Gedolim are. When you hear about Rosh Hashivas who are so sensitive about another Jew's pain, when they take on Minhagim and Chumriz and Ben Adam L'Chaveru, when you hear about people doing like things like this, and primarily when you hear the Torah's severity that the Torah assigns to something like this, it changes our understanding and changes our worldview. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow us the wisdom and the fortitude to understand this and implement this sensitivity in our own life.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all The Shmoozin free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.